future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome. Yes, it is Friday, September 24th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to that motherload of middle-aged millennial angst, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Well, we are streaming live on our YouTube channel. So don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that bell so you know every time you go live. That's the shout out right now, folks. Yes, on today's show, it is happy 10-year anniversary to Occupy Wall Street. Yep, we'll be reflecting on that today. And that's actually pretty much about the 10-year anniversary of Raging Chicken. Because these things happened in tandem. How about that, everybody? pretty cool. And here comes the subpoenas. The House Select Committee on the January 6th insurrection issued subpoenas this week to several former Trump officials, including Steve Bannon, Mark Meadows, Dan Scavino, and Kasia Patel. Yes, indeed. So let the games begin. This week, the CDC gave the green light for the Pfizer COVID booster shot for at-risk individuals. The third dose of the vaccine will be available for individuals over 65 and for adults who are at heightened risk of severe illness. Whoa. And guess who's writing our climate policy? Hey, I'll give you a hint. West Virginia and coal. Yep, there you go. You guessed it. None other than Senator Joe Manchin. Yep, Joe Manchin is the chair of the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, and he will have an oversized influence on the shape of any climate policy that emerges from the Democrats' reconciliation bill. And he's already indicated, well, he's not so happy with those climate provisions in there. There you go. Meanwhile, climate activists connected to Greta Thunberg staged their first large protest in Berlin, Germany today. They're doing actually as we speak, I think. I think they're still going on. This is the first significant Fridays for the Future protest since the pandemic. And let's call it a win for the Arizona election fraud. A win for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, that is. Yep, that's right. Those cyber ninjas pulled out all their bamboo detecting apparatuses and found that there was no there. Yep, that's right. Now Arizona has to clean up the mess. Well, after they, of course, pay off all those invoices for the cyber ninjas, that is. Yep, even the cyber ninjas could not unpack that covert plan by the Democrats. Oh my God. Maybe PA will be more successful. The New York Times reports on how raging anti-masking policies are hitting students with disabilities especially hard. That article features anti-maskers in Tennessee as the state is one of seven being investigated by the Department of Education for discrimination against students with disability during COVID. And Florida continues to impress, yes, with its ability to find new lows. Governor Ron DeSantis has appointed a new state surgeon general who, according to Slate, and I just got to quote this, quote, was last seen on the national stage participating in a COVID miracle cure event with another doctor who believes that lizard people control the government and that demons cause gynecological problems by implanting stolen sperm, as well as a third doctor who later got arrested for being part of the mob that smashed into the U.S. Capitol in an effort to overturn the presidential election. Yes, Florida, you, no one will outdo you for the crazy. You win, you win. Now just freaking stop already, would you? Oh my God. A little closer to home, Pennsylvania Senate Republicans launched their sham election review while we were away in the second hearing last week. They had the second hearing last week. Yes, Sean will give us all that. And we'll recap how Senator Chris Dush isn't ready for the prime time. We'll just have to get into it because you just gotta hear. It was something else. Harrisburg Mayor Eric Papenfuse is teaming up with charter school advocate and Commonwealth Foundation hack Otto Banks to mount a writing campaign against a Democratic primary winner, Wanda Williams. Banks, who was funded by a right-wing billionaire, Jeffrey, yes! God, I keep on hearing that name. Right. Yes, he was recently appointed as Harrisburg's Director of Community and Economic Development. There you go. You wash my back, I wash yours. That's all I say. And after the Central York School District banned books on Rosa Parks and MLK, students rose up and demanded that the books be returned to the curriculum. Well, and after national attention to the Central York monkey trial-esque book ban, the school board reversed its course and lifted the ban. Yeah, way to go, York. Put yourselves right on the map. There you go. And Susan Snyder of the Philadelphia Inquirer published an excellent profile, Steve Oros and his case against Kutztown University. That piece also looks into what other colleges and universities are doing with the COVID back-to-school plans. You recall that we had Oros on Out to Coop Live at the beginning of this month. Oros recently received a heart transplant, making him at the highest risk of severe or fatal effects of contracting COVID. Kutztown, being Kutztown, also looking to make a name for itself, following the path of Florida, denied his ADA request to return to teach online. Meanwhile, at Penn State, they just suspended 117 students who missed the required COVID-19 testing. Bye-bye. And PA Republicans, looking to get back to work for the people of the Commonwealth, decide that going to war against Governor Wolf's mask mandate is one of their top priorities, just as COVID cases spike and parents grow increasingly concerned about the safety of their children in school. Yeah, good thing the PA GOP just can't get their shit together this week. We'll talk about that. Yeah, and today's last call, yeah, we got some space news back. That's right, SpaceX launched 4 non-astronauts into real space for a 3-day tour. A three-day tour. The SpaceX Inspiration mission also raised about $200 million for St. Jude's Children's Hospital, Research Hospital in Memphis. Poor Bezos. And the U.S. Federal Court the U.S. Federal Court of Claims released a redacted version of Jeff Bezos' hissy fit lawsuit protesting NASA's decision to give SpaceX contracts for the lunar lander system to be used in upcoming Artemis missions. That left Blue Origin's aspirations a little wanting. It's rich, just rich, that Bezos is claiming that he and Blue Origin's space baby had to be treated unfairly by the government. They didn't like Elon better. Crazy. And speaking of crazy, the new Space Force uniforms, man, they've got some serious Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek feels going on. I don't know if you've seen the pictures, but woof, there you go. And scientists have discovered footprints in the White Sands National Parks dating back to more than 21,000 years ago. That means that there were actually humans in North America several thousands of years before scientists previously thought. Right, so there was actually woolly mammoth tracks above where they found these footprints, which is pretty freaking cool. And, you know, maybe I'll be talking about a little Roll D20. That's right, I'm constructing Dungeons & Dragons campaigns with my kids and stuff, and it's given me some needed respite from a bunch of craziness. Now, I should talk about the show I've been watching called The Dungeon Run, for those of you who may be fans of Dungeons & Dragons. I know, went off the rails right here on the nerdism, right? I know. Anyways, tune into the Rick Smith Show every night, streaming on YouTube, Twitter, and wherever you get your stream content. You can check out all his shows. Sign up for his podcast, his daily podcast. You'd also check him out at WBAI in New York, WPFK in Los Angeles. Just head on over to thericksmithshow.com for all the details and get all the updated information on every platform that he's on and look at his schedule, man. Congratulations to Rick for things really taking off this year. It's pretty freaking awesome. And if you haven't already, you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. The amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house. And they know where the bodies are buried. Yes, make sure to follow them on Twitter and at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus. And subscribe to their podcast wherever you get your podcast. Attention gamers, The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s to the latest consoles, video games, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, boom! And look, it's back to school, so when those report cards come in, your kids get a discount with every A. Look them up on their Facebook page and follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn, that's with two N's, and kind of drop them an email if you're looking for something special or something hard to find, thegameinnpa@gmail.com. Special shout out, as always, goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at Song of Day Man. That's at Song of Day Man on Twitter. I want to thank all the folks who recently joined and became patrons of Raging Chicken. It's been kind of like a banner month, I got to say. Thank you so much for everyone who's about recent members who kind of jumped on. And that was especially meaningful this week. We had a couple people that who've been supporters of the show for a long time, but had to drop off this month because of financial concerns, right? And for other people to step up and actually kind of become patrons and that thing was phenomenal for us, right? And it's kind of like also lets us know how we need to build this platform. Because look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron today. We're here for the fight, but we need you. Become a patron for a good price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media and the movement and the media. Head on over to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron today. Sean, man, it's good to be back on this Friday, and it looks like we're ramping up the dial on the crazy factor too. So it's perfect timing.
Yeah, I mean, I will say one thing: I am shocked that there was no bamboo found in the Arizona ballots.
Shocked, I tell you, shocked.
Yes, I was really shocked. I was surprised, you know.
I'm still convinced that the Chinese have figured a way of altering the kind of genetic makeup of the bamboo shoots to make it appear as if it was actually linen instead of bamboo.
Yes. So
those Chinese.
So
Jesus Christ.
But man, I don't know where to begin. I guess let's start with like off with like happy things. So like happy 10-year anniversary to Occupy Wall Street. I wanted to talk about that definitely last week. But no, I want to talk about it this week as well. Yeah, I mean, like, it's been amazing thinking it's been 10 years since Occupy kicked off.
Yep.
And just, like, I mean, that's right. When I got involved with activism, you know, Cyril said it.
Yep.
A bunch of other people said it. Like, this changed our lives getting involved. And, like, really don't know where I would be right now if I didn't get involved with Occupy Wall Street or, like, involved, like, with the activism, like, right around that point, like, with the education cuts and stuff like that.
Dude, it's like, that's where, I mean, like
you said this to me on the bus ride, like, this is, your life's going to change after this.
Yep. Yep.
So, but yeah.
No, that's exactly right. And like, look, I mean, I can remember like, that's when we just got Raging Chicken really kind of off the ground when you came on as a writer where, you know, when, you know, that day, I think, you know, that you kind of show up outside my office sitting on that seat at Kutztown and we start kind of talking about ways to get involved, and then you were kind of doing stuff with Occupy. I can still remember. I think I still have the email from you at some point, which you kind of had sent to me. He's like, "Hey, I just found out that Occupy Philly didn't have a Facebook page or online presence yet, so I just set one up for him, and I'm going to go ahead and do that." Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it was really cool. Like, even just getting involved with that, that's how I got involved with the communication stuff too. Just doing social media and talking to the press, talking to Will Bunch. Like getting comfortable talking to reporters. I did a really long interview before in the summer with Will about the 10-year anniversary of like Occupy and like where, how things have changed for me and like where I've gone with this stuff. I hope it's going to be in the book that he's coming up with about Occupy and how it's changing college campuses. Cause I mean, like that's when I got started was in college and like it's interesting seeing where I'm at now doing the things I'm enjoying that, like, you know what I mean? I'm not stuck at a job writing a desk, like just doing monotonous like bullshit office work.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think that the Occupy help pad the resumes of a lot of people too. I mean, the impact that it's had, I really do think it has changed. It fundamentally changed and been a kind of reset starting points for like a whole generation of folks that were kind of like first getting involved.
It just raised the ceiling of what things were possible.
Yes.
It made that like language possible. Like, this is what we can do.
Right.
Like, I mean, and seeing that, I don't think you have people like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders
Never.
Get national prominence without Occupy Wall Street happening, right? We don't see Black Lives Matter take off maybe the way it does in organizing, like, you know, like the extension of that and like other movements over the years.
Right.
And it's just been awesome seeing that, like, the people who I got involved in Occupy with, or like the Philly education cuts that was happening like that spring before Occupy because of Corbett cutting $1 billion in education.
Right.
And like all the rallies that were going on. Like you had, this is when Helen Gim was in her prime as an activist, education activist. You know, this is when like the times when, you know, we're meeting people like Rick Rajewski, Nikhil, like other like people within the progressive movement that are actually like figures within it now, like doing organizing roles and like doing some like really cool shit. And it all goes back to like that point with Occupy and then like with the education cuts that happened in Philadelphia the spring before.
Yeah, you know, and I think I have to say I'm really happy to see there's been some really excellent articles that have kind of come out kind of that were that are kind of reflective and kind of putting Occupy in historical context here. There was a great piece in Dissent that came out kind of last week, and there's been kind of a series of them. Really, I think acknowledging the role of Occupy, because you, I mean, we talked about this at the time, is like, you remember the coverage of Occupy at the time, there was like, first of all, like
no left media.
Well, yeah, well, no mainstream media could even understand what Occupy was about, right? They couldn't even kind of get it right about what was there. And then there was the predictable response to like, oh, Occupy called for fundamental transformation of U.S. society, and they didn't get it. Phil, right? And
I still see those arguments today.
They're still there. They're still there. But I mean, you know, you know how prominent it was at that particular point. And, you know, the argument that I made at the time, I remember that lots of people were making at times, like, look, social movements don't work like a light switch, right? You know, it's not on, off, either or. And the fact that, you know, the whole, you know, just by itself, the idea that we have the 1% and the 99%, that became a lasting frame, the way we think about inequality, that never would have even been on the table had it not been for Occupy. And then all the organizing experience that was embedded in that has continued. And those folks who were involved with Occupy have become leaders in this kind of next generation of struggle, which is amazing.
I remember going after protesting Corbett. Like his last week in office, he was like going to enter a Philadelphia school for the first time. Right. And this was Central High School.
Right.
I made it on the front page of the education news, standing there with my like RC press pin and like phone going. But like the kids on the inside of that had like actions planned where they were just going to walk out and like sit in the hallways and not say a word. Like there was madness happening on the inside. Mm-hmm. Like, there was madness on the outside stopping Corbett from visiting, going into the school. Like, fuck you. You're not, you cut $1 billion in public ed and never visited a Philadelphia school and you want to do this now.
Yep.
So there was like hundreds of us outside of Central. We get word that Corbett booked and went down to the Union League. So like 50 or 60 of us ran to the subway, got on the express train from Alney Ave down to like Chestnut, and like we're able to block Corbett from leaving the Union League. Like we chased him around Philadelphia that day.
That's awesome. So great.
And no, I mean, like, so the people there, like Andy Perez is there. She was now with like SEIU and still working with them. Rick Krajewski was there. It's like from with like Action United or like Reclaim, or there's like an activist. Like that's where like those connections go back, and like then like Reclaim happens, and like no, like all this stuff happened because of like Occupy. Like we could see that here, and really like Lancaster stands up, like Jonathan Smucker, who was, you know, Occupy got him to be influential. Lancaster stands up, now PA stands up. Like a lot of great stuff has like come out of that a decade later.
Well, and you look at, I mean, like, and then you go beyond that, right? You talk about, you know, publications like Jacobin, for example, will kind of emerge kind of in the aftermath of that, right? Then
in these times,
been around for a long time, but you saw suddenly, boom, right? These huge upticks. We see, you know, the kind of the seeds of the Bernie Sanders campaign and then kind of the explosion of DSA. And then, I mean, you just go and then, right? You know, each one of these movements and kind of organizational, like, you know, kind of post-Occupy organization or attempts at organization and building institutions has just only, you know, built out strength, right? You know, and I think that I always think it, you know, Occupy was a fracturing of the kind of the status quo, right? It was that it was a momentary break with business as usual, right? Which is so essential when it comes to actually
building
resistance. And also
brought like progressive groups together or progressives who normally wouldn't, like who were siloed.
Yep.
With their own issues. Like, no, and I mean, it really brought the movement together and like it's been around in a way where it just hasn't gone away since.
Indeed, indeed. So happy anniversary, Occupy. Like absolutely fantastic to be kind of thinking back over this. I've been, you know, all week long, I've been just kind of like kind of remembering, recalling these different little moments right at that kind of origin. I mean, I can even remember just from the summer, right? Seeing those first announcements that went out, you know, with the ballet dancer on top of the bull. Right. I'm just basically say, show up.
I was going to go to Zuccotti that day.
Really?
Like, I really just got my student loan money in. I had a couple $100 to like drive up and do that, like park at the Metro. Yeah. No, I was going to do that. Like, I'm pissed. I was so mad I didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I was legitimately just like debating or taking the Bieber bus up and have my backpack and a sleeping bag just in case. Like, no, I mean, like, yeah, it was cool. One of the best things I did at Occupy was we went up to, this is my last story with this. We went to Zuccotti Park on New Year's Eve and ripped the police barricades out of the hands of the police and threw it in the middle of the park and got pictures on top of it. Like, and then slept under a park bench in Chinatown with like a Mylar blanket.
I still remember you with this big yellow banner Occupy thing, kind of in this heaping pile of cages or you know, police barricades.
Bicycle racks.
Yeah, bicycle rack, basically. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that was fun. So.
Well, hey, happy anniversary to Occupy. Your spirit lives. Yes, indeed. So, I mean, a couple things too. You know, one of the things, obviously, good news that we're seeing this stuff coming out with Pfizer and the booster shot as kind of COVID numbers continue to escalate, which is, I'm telling you, Sean, it's got me like the COVID numbers have got me like just talking myself.
I was looking at numbers with COVID and like we are already at like February numbers.
Yes.
Like going back up to like, and it's like, it's not like we're going exponential with the growth. It feels like it's just a slow linear like progression. Like, are we just going to bend upwards? Like, you know what I mean? At some point, or it just feels like it's just like a slow tick.
Well, you think it's like, you know, I mean, if you had to personify the COVID virus at this point, it's almost like it's sitting there saying like, okay, look, I know I'm pushing my luck here, but I'm going to kill 600,000. Why is 600? I know it's pushing my luck a little bit. What? What? Nobody did anything?
750,000?
No, how about 700,000? Do I hear 750? We're gonna have more than a million deaths by the end of this thing. We're at 2,000 deaths a day right now.
I know.
And nobody's freaking blinking an eye. It's driving me insane.
It's fucking ridiculous how people are just like, I mean, like, once we like, hey, fuck it. It's April 1st. We got the vaccines rolling out. And we're just kind of like relax all the protocols before like a fraction of the population is even like vaccinated. And then like people were just running fucking hog wild all summer. Just like, I mean, we were out on vacation. I'm not going to say we weren't, but we were vaccinated. But like people were fucking just out everywhere. No masks. Like there was no fucking virus going on.
Dude, I walk around like I feel like I'm a freak half the time because like I'm walking into like a Wawa or something like this and I've got my mask on and everyone else is like,
get dirty fucking looks from people.
And everyone's like, oh, right. And they're talking. They're like, oh, yeah. And they're like coughing and shit.
The asshole with the mask on.
I mean, like, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's just freaking nuts.
And it's like, dude, you know, these people aren't fucking vaccinated. It's like the thing. And it's just like, no. And I mean, like, I watched There was that video that, do you watch that story about that 24-year-old who died on MSNBC? MSNBC has a 24-year-old died of COVID out in like Billings, Montana. Oh,
I didn't see this. No,
they interviewed him a week before, and like he was on an oxygen tube in his nose, and just like, he was saying just like get the vaccine, and just we were lied to, and I believe the propaganda. Like this dude was just total unvaxxed, like COVID denier, fed into like the right wing echo chamber. And like now he's like on his deathbed, literally died a week after this interview. 24-year-old father of like a five month old. Like, and it's just like seeing those stories add up. Like, you know, there are people making jokes about it, the like, which is like shot, like the Schadenfreude. And it's just like, but like this is what we get with the right-wing billionaires funding this infrastructure of right-wing talk media and think tanks since like the 70s and 80s.
Yep.
To like churn out misinformation and disinformation. That's who's doing it across this country. It's these right-wing Koch-funded think tanks and on the state level groups, your SPN, your Heritage Foundation. Like they are spreading this misinformation about masks or vaccines and stuff like that. Media is picking it up. You have legislators picking it up. And it's like, it is killing. Like their echo chamber is killing their like voters, their constituents.
Legitimately. They're, yeah, exactly.
Like, and you have people on their deathbed saying, I wish I would have gotten the vaccine.
I mean, I tell you, there was.
I mean, I look at these stories and it's just like people in their 30s dying. Like that's why I got the vaccine.
Well, exactly. There was, I'll tell you, there was
like, because I didn't want to end up. I don't want to end up like that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's this article that just came that I just saw posted to as well. That they're it's part of this project in Kentucky. There was just another teacher who died. There are up to 41 teachers who have died, and this teacher was 29 years old. She was 29 years old. She was vaccinated even. Right. And so, you know, at least that's what the reporting was. And it was, you know, she got it. She was out for a couple of weeks and now she's dead. You know, and it's getting, you talk about in Kentucky, one of the places that fought against any mask mandates or anything like this is like, this is devastating. I mean, it's really devastating. I mean, I think back, we've now surpassed the Spanish flu as the number of deaths, right? Just in terms of from the pandemic. You know, there's been more people that have died because of this than World War II. I mean, this is just like astounding.
Right? And we're just numb to it now.
Well, and that is just, I mean, I've said this before, so I don't want to belabor the point, but I really have a hard time getting my head around just that aspect of like our, say, humanness at this point. I'm trying to sound like whatever existential or something like this, but I mean, like, it baffles my mind. And I know that it's because of this freaking right wing kind of machine that has been just pumping out the disinformation. But you know, there's got to be a reckoning for this. I mean, people have got to have consequences for this stuff in the end.
But, yeah, I mean, like, I don't think there will be.
Yeah, I.
I mean, like, this is a fucking like buckle up. This is a preview for the future.
Like, well, I mean,
this is what we're fighting against. Like,
right.
This is like a preview for the future with like impending climate catastrophes and shit like this.
Exactly. Right. And I look at, so you pair this with these kind of three stories this week, right? So on the one hand, we've got, you know, thank goodness you've got these, the subpoenas that are going out for, you know, former White House strategist, Steve Bannon, and a kind of all around, you know, kind of right-wing media kind of baron. You have former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and you have former Social Media Director Dan Scavino, and Kashyap Patel, who was the Chief of Staff to Trump's Defense Secretary, of all the subpoenas are issued there. So you've got that January 6th insurrection, which is kind of like this fomenting of kind of like authoritarian impulses. Then you've got like, you know, a climate crisis. We just had the IPCC report drop, you know, back in August, basically saying, look, we've got less time than we thought we did. right, in order to kind of get this right. We have not seen a decline in emissions. We've actually seen an increase, right? And so the devastation looks like it's coming pretty fast if we don't act kind of really, really quickly. Now we've got this climate legislation that is kind of part of the reconciliation package. That reconciliation package started off at $6 billion, right? And now it's been whittled down to $3.5 billion. Trillion dollars. I'm sorry, I was talking B's and $1 trillion. And then you got Joe Manchin at the center of it, basically saying, I'm not going to fight for it. This is not good for me. And when pushed to say, well, give us a number, apparently there was some summit where Biden just went and talked to him and they said, look, you guys got to come up with a number. You got to come up with a counter. And they're like, nah, we'll see how it goes. And Manchin's suggesting this could drag on forever, right? Maybe we don't really need to do this, you know, who knows? And then it turns out on top of Manchin holding up the entire thing, you know, because that reconciliation package is where all the climate mitigation stuff is. Right, the stuff that's actually going to kind of like help us, right, stave this stuff off, right? Turns out the guy in charge of writing the climate portion of that reconciliation bill is none other than Joe Manchin himself, right? So, you know, you've got this, and we know, to go back to your point, is we know that part of what that means is that the kind of pandemic that we just lived through, that's going to become more common, right? That there's every kind of prediction about what this actually means with this warming of the planet is we're going to see more of this.
And then we got the continuing like frauded bullshit that's happening in different states around the country.
Right. No, exactly. Right.
Which is like continuing this undermining of our elections.
Yep.
And democracy. Like it's
that thing in Arizona, right? It comes back. We just get the news this week that, yeah, it turns out, yeah, Biden won. Duh. Right? After it was kind of like, you know, volunteer circus. Even with a name like Cyber Ninjas. Right? I mean, seriously, who had no experience in kind of any kind of election stuff. They're basically hired by the Arizona Republican Party to go out and kind of do this fraudit kind of stuff. And they do it, you know, rent out space and they do all this stuff and they're looking for bamboo because it's like imported Chinese ballots coming in, all this kind of nonsense. And then after all that, let's remember, just if you don't know this already, it's September in 2021, right? We're almost a year out from the election that this shit has been going on in Arizona.
We're fucking doing this now here in Pennsylvania. Yep. A year. It's been a year. Like, it's been a fucking year.
Well, you know, you got to keep this. It going, right?
It's a MacGuffin.
Yeah, there you go. When Doug Mastriano was down there in Arizona getting tips, they were probably like, the Cyber Ninja guy's probably like, hey, look, man, it's I don't think we can go past like September with this scheme we got going on here. So if you guys want to pick up the baton, right, when we close it out, man, pull it over to Pennsylvania to keep this ball rolling.
So I want to talk about that like pretty soon.
Yeah.
It's just like so much shit going on.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna give some extra space for our PA stuff that's going on, because I think that there is a lot going on. But I just wanted to, you know, say, like, you know, put those things on the headlines and just kind of setting out the context for this, for what's going on this week. You know, you've got, you have these individual news items, but when you put them together, right, you're looking at the climate crisis, you look at this reconciliation bill, you look at what happened at January 6th, and now you've got the investigation of this, you've got the election fraud, stuff like this, you've got the uptick in climate activism now that we're seeing that starting in Berlin today. All that stuff is the impact. And then we're seeing this kind of, I don't know, normalization of death and kind of like in the midst of this coronavirus stuff, which is crazy. I mean, the story that came out of Tennessee about, you know, students with disabilities getting especially hit hard because of all this anti-masker stuff. You know, this is happening in our own. We have this issue happening in our own school districts too, as well as like students with disabilities who need to, you know, who benefit from being in school, right? But are also kind of at severe risk of, you know, of really horrible kind of consequences of contracting COVID, are being forced into schools where they've kind of, you know, are not masking, right? So I mean, little crap like this.
And you had Senator Scott Martin say this week, you can just go; those parents can just put their kids somewhere else.
Exactly.
Or just go homeschool.
Exactly.
And go get a tax credit from a voucher from a private and take your kid to one of their their buddies' cyber charters.
It's really astounding. I mean, I talked about this on the show on Monday and out to Coop Live this past Monday about the, I have a sister who's got, kind of mental disabilities. Right. And I can't imagine, right. If she was still in school, I mean, she's only like, 2 years younger than I am, but if she was still in school and they were subjecting her to this stuff, I can't even imagine. Right. What my parents would go through. And I was an angry kid at that point, right? And if this was happening, I can't imagine how freaking furious I would be. It's going off the rails. And then you think like, okay, well, maybe, maybe this is going to cool down, maybe the fever is going to break, because we heard like Obama say way back in the day. But then no, you've got freaking like people like Governor Ron DeSantis down in Florida just kind of like doubling down on the crazy, like putting like a guy, right, in charge of, health stuff, right? The state surgeon general is a guy who's basically been doing kind of like snake oil sales shows kind of in his career earlier in the year.
So did you see, like, do you know how fucking crazy Florida's medical market is? Like supplemental market and shit like that?
I don't know how crazy. Do tell.
Okay, so I was watching this just because, like, I was watching some baseball videos. Mm-hmm. And because of like the steroid stuff with Manny Ramirez and others, like the reason why they were able to like get all their steroids is because it's pretty much just legal in Florida. Because of like the senior community being down there. So they just deregulated all those fucking drugs. Like you can just buy prescriptions from like doctors and shit like that. And
street corners with a big thing. You get your freaking hot pretzel and you get your prescription.
There's no regulation, no enforcement like of prescription fraud, like with doctors. And they just gutted all that stuff in the regulatory. So like that stuff's just able to like all that snake oil is literally just able to proliferate in Florida without like any repercussions, and they just fucking attack the senior community with this shit.
It's really something. It's really something. I gotta say.
And they're doing this now during the pandemic.
I gotta say,
Regeneron and stuff like that, the monoclonal antibodies.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's all what this stuff is, like ivermectin. Like, I mean, like all this type of shit is just like allowed in Florida. Florida is basically like an open air drug mart. Like that's just legalized.
There you go. Oh my God. Anyways, so that's what we got going on. Here's the kind of the happy news of what's, this is what it looks like as we're on the precipice of the kind of like downfall of an empire. And what that feels like on a daily basis. You ever wondered? Well, here it is, folks. This is what it feels like. Doesn't have to be this way. Right. Thank God that we've got kind of like the organizing efforts around that we do. But holy moly, do we got to turn this ship. We got to turn it fast. Well, listen, we got a bunch of stuff that is going on in PA today. We don't want to kind of short shrift that, and we want to get to that because it's been something else this week. So look, I'm gonna put out the pitch again. I want to thanks to all our new members this month. Really, it's been pretty astounding. It's been great. I also want to thank everybody who's been out there sharing our materials. Like, man, especially the kind of the interviews that have come out, the one we did with Steve Oros, who I'll talk about in the second part, the interviews with the school board members in the Penn Ridge School District. People have been sharing that stuff out. That's been absolutely fantastic. We've been getting great feedback. We've been connecting up with other folks. I want to also give a shout out to Cyril Michalako. We do the Wednesday show. He did this profile of me for his newsletter. I was floored by that. So thank you for the kind words and the promotion of what we're doing here at the Chicken. So, we're here for the fight. Right. And this is kind of like, it feels like we're at the moment we've been waiting for to build out these connections and kind of like assist where we can and actually, build this movement. So if you can find a way to help support this work, you head on over to patreon.com/rcpress. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. We appreciate you all, appreciate you sharing our stuff, and appreciate the support that you've been giving us. We'll be back right after this quick break. Some PA focus.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1918. That was the day that the Industrial Workers of the World Union was banned in Canada. The Industrial Workers of the World Union had grown steadily in Canada, reaching as many as 10,000 members by 1911. The union was especially strong in mining, logging, and the textile industry. But backlash against the radical union was mounting in the United States and in Canada. Swept up in Red Scare hysteria, the governments of both nations targeted the IWW. With the beginning of World War I, labor unions that dared to threaten strikes or to speak out against militarization were met with harsh reprisals. By 1914, the Canadian IWW had less than 1,000 members. In May of 1918, 18 Canadian IWW leaders were arrested while they attended a meeting in Ottawa. Those arrested were immigrants and were sent to a labor internment camp. Then the Canadian government moved to ban the organization altogether. The ban against the IWW would last until the end of World War I. Those found to be affiliated with the union faced up to 5 years in prison. 13 other organizations were also banned in Canada, including the Chinese Labor Association and the Social Labor Party. The act further read that it was illegal to attend meetings, except religious services, during the present war at which the proceedings are conducted in the language of any country with which Canada is at war, or in the languages of Russia, Ukraine, or Finland. After the war, the IWW was once again allowed in Canada and slowly began to rebuild. But the scars inflicted during the war years took a lasting toll on the union's membership. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back. It's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here once again with Sean Kitchen. So, Sean, man, PA has not been a boring place this week. What is going on? The circus is in town.
Yes. The circus is back in town. I think that, after the first couple of hearings, Dush would not be working for Barnum and Bailey's circus, that's for sure. He does not have the capacity to run
a circus.
if his life depended on it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like I think this is what we can just call this thing, a circus. I think we might have been able to hear the first meeting since our last podcast, but there was a second meeting. So, in the first meeting, our emails that we uncovered about Stuart Ulsh wanting to overturn election results and emailing two of the committee members about that, Judy Ward and Senator Mastriano. When questioned the first time, Vincent Hughes did that. Dush shut down completely. So, the second meeting happened I'm also, cold, so mind my shivering a little bit. I'm, sitting next to my window, and it's, literally, 55, 60 degrees in my apartment right now, because I had my windows open all night. But Dush then had the second meeting when everyone showed up. This was to vote on the approval of the subpoenas. Senator Portman was there. And the way the room is set up, it's more almost a news studio type feel. If you've seen the photos of it or my video,
yep.
Desks in the front, desk up top in the back. You have lights coming down, really well lit, studio wise, but it's tight, compact, and you can get in on the sides. So you can record from the sides, a side action. And
you're flanking them.
So I decided to post up there. I took out my new gimbal and decided. So that guy gave me an extra 3 feet to reach.
I can imagine you pull it up, just all the heads of people in the front kind of they're just turned what the heck has he got now?
So there was a couple of things that happened during this committee hearing that were just masterclasses of questioning. Mm-hmm. One was Senator San Isidro interviewed or just grilled Dush
for like 20 minutes, just like back and forth questions, just like short, like, and then what? Oh, okay. And then, well, what about that? Like, very just like leading questions, which that whole entire segment will become important later for a couple of reasons. So, and then like maybe like 15 or 20 minutes into this, he starts getting, no, like, or well, like 10 minutes in, you can see like the whole entire time they're texting back and forth with their chief of staff who's sitting in the front row and the lawyers from the Republican caucus. Cause you can see like the guy passing the phone back and forth, like the Dush who's sitting next to him. And like, you can see them, like, there's points like Dush literally like looking at Sam Seer, turns around, and you can see him like almost like shake his head, like, the fuck am I supposed to say? Type of thing. To his like people in the front. And so like this is the perspective you're getting just from being in the room with this stuff. And then like 10 minutes in, Dush answers something that's just completely like wrong. Like talking about like third party vendors. And Senator Sanders is like, I'm not on third-party vendors yet. That's not what I asked. But we'll be ready in a few minutes. We'll revisit that pretty soon. And then at that point, Sanders then asks about Sidney Powell. Like, is it possible? It's like, is what possible? Like, is it possible? So you're saying, like, it's possible. And, like...
Is what possible? Saying, yeah. Be explicit, right?
Like, yeah, and then just like, what do you mean? Like, can Sidney Powell, like, in a group associated with Sidney Powell, gets this information? Like, you know, the information of 9 million voters in Pennsylvania. And he's just like, you're out of line. He's like, well, is it possible? And he's like, well, is what possible? He goes, is it possible? And you see Corman in the background just start laughing. And then Dush, like, Corman's just taking off his glasses at this point, just like putting them slowly on the desk. And then Dush blurts out, yeah, it's possible. I mean, we found out putting a man on the moon was possible. Anything's possible. And Corman,
anything's
just,
possible,
like,
in the world of magic.
And then Corman just cringes. Like, I can't believe we just said that. Then Sanicero follows up. What about the Bradley Foundation? Is it possible anyone's getting funding from the Bradley Foundation? And Dush then turned around, like, I don't understand what's your point.
He's looking for the door to run to.
He's like, I don't understand what's your point. What point you're trying to make? And then Sanicero,
just asking like, questions. Just asking questions.
And then Sanicero with a smirk on his face, like, I think it's pretty apparent what point I'm trying to make right now. Like, so like, and just went on. Like, so that ends that. But yeah, like, so then Senator Hughes asked the question, should someone like Doug Mastriano, who attended the insurrection, have access to this? And like, Dush then just like cut the lights. Like, sorry, saying, he's like, all right, cut the feed. Like, they literally cut the cameras and the microphones, like, going out. And Dush turned around, it's like, those allegations are blah, 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 aren't true. And, like, we recorded that. And then the next question was, well, Senator Ulch said this and emailed these two people. Should they have access to those information? And then, like, Dush started screaming at him again with the cameras off. He literally ordered the cameras off twice. And I was able to, like, record them, like, off camera with what they were saying with my gimbal. I was able to just get up in the air, put my camera down, just, like, right to them. And it got to the point when the Senate security guard, like, 3 minutes later, said, you have to move. I'm like, all right, I already got my gold.
Sean's like, you mean I can't stand on this table with my gimbal anymore? Kept getting higher and higher and closer and closer.
Yeah.
No, that's something. I mean, that stuff was just absolutely like gold, right? Because, I mean, it just like laying, like, first of all, kudos to Sanicero and kudos to Hughes right, for the direct questions, right? And the kudos to you for being in there and having that camera roll, because without that, you wouldn't get to see that, right? The fact that he cut off the feeds was unbelievable, because he did not want to see, like, did not want to be recorded, basically trying to kind of, like, you know, give a tongue lashing to Hughes.
Yeah. And but then
he was so freaking nervous.
So, like, that happened. We put the video up of the Sidney Powell question, like, and Fetterman's been sharing that around a couple of times. They got like 90,000 views since in the last week, just because of Fetterman bumping it a couple of times. His online presence is just like unreal.
It's ginormous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the reason why that San Siro question was really important, and like the Olsh emails, like Senator Shapiro is now using that stuff. Like, he has that whole entire transcript of that in as an exhibit in his lawsuit to stop the squash of subpoenas.
Yeah.
And then he also footnoted and highlighted our emails in there, which is pretty cool.
Nice. Nice, nice.
Some accountability scores.
Yep. And big time. And, you know, again, that's what we need to have. I mean, this is why it's so awesome also that you're inside there.
And also the messaging with this. Like, the messaging that, is going out is such a negative driver, like, in such key demographics, like, literally, like, men, white men, 35 to 55, are, like, 50-50 with the placebo questions about this information. And then when you say it's your personal private data, like, driver's license number, social security numbers, like, it goes from, like, being 50-50 to, like, 66-33.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the messaging, like, the Republicans have really stepped on themselves with this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, anytime...
It's driving a lot of...
I mean, anytime you say, like, yeah, look, you have a political party, right, who's attempting to get all of your personal information, including your Social Security numbers and everything.
Of 9 million
like
people.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a winning message, right? You know, I mean, it is kind of like, you know, if you're like the party saying, like, we want all of your private information, nope, that's not getting out there. That's not going.
And also, like, what I think this is, right, this is my theory behind this. You have this stuff happening in Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia, other states around the country. Like, with this, these are swing states that Trump wanted to overturn the election to win. Like, what this looks like is a giant list building scam.
Yes.
Because if I get your social security numbers, I get your four, you know, I can then use that information to get your phone number, track your phone number to your social media. All that data, I mean, it's just like Cambridge Analytica stuff. You can make a political profile of every individual voter based on, like, that information and know who to target and how to target and how to micro-target. Like, with the technology that's out there today. Like, this to me seems like a giant list-building scam
for makes sense.
2024.
Or 2022.
Or 2022.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, this information is out there, but, like, this information is hard to compile. It takes time. It takes resources. It takes money to buy lists from other people lists.
Right.
This is an attempt to build your own master list.
Right. And what it's attempting to do, it's attempting to use public resources right, for the benefit of a political party.
A political campaign.
Yes, exactly. And that's the difference. So basically, you don't need the private expenditures and the private work. You make the state apparatus do the work for your party, right? This is that same kind of autocratic authoritarian impulse.
And this is what the right wing is doing to go after public sector unions and stuff like that. Like,
yes,
using
indeed.
Government. Yeah. So why not just use it like that?
Yeah, I was happy to see that, you know, and speaking of which, having to see the face of Simon Campbell popping up once again, who is, you know, always loves to do this every once in a while. So they're probably learning from that dude. So crazy. So now you also got, you know, not to go too local, but you got a kind of great little mayoral kind of
shit show happening in Harrisburg.
Shit show happening right there.
Yes, and there may actually be some, like, benefits to this. Sorry, I need to take it. So in Harrisburg, Eric Papenfuss, who lost his primary by like 60 or 70 votes, is deciding to team up with Otto Banks, who is like literally bought and paid for by the charter school industry and the Commonwealth Foundation, and Jeffrey Yass, and like the right-wing infrastructure in the state, to mount a write-in campaign against Wanda Williams. So, what I've heard is like Papenfuss hasn't been at city council. He's showed up to every city council meeting for 7.5 years, hasn't been to a single one since April, hasn't been in the office since losing the primary, and is now giving jobs out to Otto Banks and his cronies in different positions of state government in order to like just like the lowest of the fucking low to like run this like write-in campaign against Wanda Williams, which is like going from Wanda, like the optics of this white man,
right,
white Republican,
right,
power structure, mounting a write-in campaign against a powerful black woman. Not a good look.
No. Especially when you're hanging out with Otto Banks and things like this, being like, listen, maybe I can help you out. I help you. You help me. You know what I'm saying? We got this lady. This lady who wants to run. This is not going to be good for any of us. So it's disgusting. It's freaking disgusting.
So like you have the Republicans helping this, supporting this, because hey, you have Papenfuss, who is pretty much a Republican, like helping out, like to keep the status quo in charge. So like, yep. Otto Banks, yeah, like these people are just fucking despicable. Like, yeah, he's just aligning himself with right now. And the fact that like this is happening, so Wanda, like people are now having to spend money and get a campaign going for Wanda, which shouldn't be that hard. They're not expecting Papenfuss to win this, but now like you're expecting, now like you have unions and other groups spending $5,000 or $10,000. Writing checks to Wanda because like they need to fucking win.
Yeah.
And like it's just this like sore fucking loser mentality that also like should not be tolerated whatsoever.
Well, you know, I think, you know, one of the good potential outcomes of this, though, I have to say, is that there is that kind of attention to this, right, that you actually are having people mobilize around kind of a mayoral election, where, you know, a lot of people check out for kind of, you know, local elections like this. That could be a potential positive down the road, because people are paying more attention to what's actually happening within City Hall.
Well, some people are thinking this is positive for the county races that are happening, because there's a city controller seat up. Democrats have like literally never held a row office in Dauphin County's history, like ever. And Eric Epstein is a Democrat, well-known in the area. He has a website called Rock the Capitol. He's known for like filing right to know requests, doing things on his own, blasting school boards, really looking into financials. He ran a couple years ago against Andy Lewis and lost. Now he's running for controller in Dauphin County, and Republicans are running this no-name woman from Halifax, while like he is school board member, or like school board president of like one of the largest school districts in the county, like suburban Dauphin County. So like there's that going on. Republicans are now scared that he may actually win the controller position. And if he wins county controller position, checks aren't going out.
Yeah.
And he's just going to use that as a leverage to like start cleaning up some of the, like there, he can start fucking with things in county government to start cleaning up like the graft. And they're afraid of that. And now that there's a mayor race in Harrisburg that has to drive like an extra like few thousand voters out in the county, like he may actually win this seat because of that.
Wow.
There might be down ballot implications because of Wanda.
Hey, fingers and,
you know,
crossed.
You have more people voting for the judges, statewide judges, like, these are type of races that like an extra few thousand votes may actually help decide, you know, what judges get statewide seats.
Cool, man. Let's hope. I'd like to see it. Like to see it.
That's all I got to say right now.
There you go. Fantastic.
Allow me to take a break.
Yeah, there you go. So after the I had to say it was nice little watching the roller coaster ride in Central York School District this past week, where you had the Central York School District ban some books on Rosa Parks and MLK. Right. So these were like literally like the I am Rosa.
Children's books.
Yes, exactly. Like I am Rosa Parks, like I am MLK one, like with the little kind of like, you know, cartoon drawings of kind of the little Rosa Parks telling her story, right, for kids, right, through these inspirational ones. And look, they're one, I have to say, I mean, I've read these to my kids. I mean, you know, I mean, we've read a whole bunch of them, right? My daughter used to bring home these books like left and right. So she would go, you know, like for, especially for kind of like women, she's like, ever since she was little, she's always would look like, well, where are the girls? Right. And she goes and looks at this stuff. So she goes like, you know, I am Amelia Earhart. I am, you know, you know, pick your female inventor. You know, she's read them and we read them all and they're actually well done. And they're more, I say the Rosa Parks one, for example, is more historically accurate than a lot of us have learned Rosa Parks' story, right? Is it just like, I was young, and when I was coming home for work on a bus one day, I was tired, so I sat down, and then they told me to move, and I said, no, because I'm tired, and then a bus boycott happened magically, right? No, they talk about her role with the NAACP as being part of an organizer, right? And so it actually does good, big, you know, biographic information on stuff. So it's really kind of like they're fairly decent, right? And those are the kind of things that they were banning, right? And there's a longer list of this, right? And of course, this is part of the same kind of like anti-CRT nonsense that is going on in school. Right. It's all this kind of stuff. And so that got, and that was like, people went like, what is going on? And then Newsweek comes out with a piece like highlighting the book ban, right? You know, kind of.
Well, the students really started.
Yeah. But I think the students got to come and start pushing back on the, I'm sorry, I was getting this out of, like, just kind of like out of order. So the students got to start kind of rising up and pushing back against this stuff, being like, no,
get the national media coverage.
Right. Then they get the, then you got the Newsweek comes in and kind of gives the kind of national media coverage of this stuff. And then he eventually kind of like, you know, push back and they win, right? They have a school board meeting earlier this week, right? They said, oh, no, they say, it wasn't a ban.
9-0 vote.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, we're not taking any political fallout for this. 9-0 every, no, yeah, give reason. And it was never a ban. It was a freeze, like whatever you want to say. Right. But it was the same nonsense that we see, you know, again, let's remember that, you know, the same thing happened here in the Penridge School District, and it's happening in the Central Buck School District. It's happening in the Palisades School District. It's happening in school districts across the Commonwealth.
I really think like this is what it's going to take. It's going to take students pushing back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're seeing some of that and you're seeing, you know, parents with, some of these parents in these school districts scream at the students for standing up. But like, I think this is going to be a student driven thing, just push back against their crazy fucking school boards.
Yeah. I think it becomes so much harder for,
I think it's going to become toxic to the, I think they're going to.
Yep. I hope so. Yeah. I really hope so, because that's it. You know, and then so you see this kind of like this switch going on, and like, you know, and again, is, you know, what you notice about these quote unquote kind of movements, like the anti-DEI stuff, the minute that a kind of like attention gets put on it, right, in any wide form that goes beyond the little kind of particular discursive universe that school board is inhabiting, right, that a light comes on it from outside, they start freaking out. Right. I mean, you know, in most cases, I live in a particular crazy school district, right, where the people who are in control are really kind of ideologues that are kind of, you know, half of them are kind of on the Q train. So, you know, that kind of happens. But a lot of them, you get the pressure on it, and then they start looking like, shit. Right. I'm bringing negative coverage of our community, like to the national level. Right. That causes a problem. So, you know, all kudos goes to those students who organized and kind of pushed back against their school board. Take notice, activists. This is kind of where it's got to go. And a similar score. You know, you've got, you remember that I had an Out to Coop Live at the beginning of September, I think it was September 6th, I had Steve Oros on. He's an associate professor of psychology at Kutztown University, recently had a heart transplant, and after kind of like doing a really kind of quick recovery process, lots of physical therapy, kind of trying to get himself back up into kind of, you know, I mean, as peak a shape as he possibly can. He was finally cleared by his doctors to kind of come back to work. But they said, listen, there's no way you're going back to work in the classroom because you're having COVID cases spiking. And you are at some of the highest risk for severe or fatal complications if you can, you know, contract COVID. So we're not going to clear you for that. So Steve basically goes to the administration at Kutztown University and says, hey, look, this is, I got the clearance. This is great news, but I can't do it in the classroom. So can we just kind of do have the classes shifted to online? And of course, we have just been through a whole year where the university in a monumental shift kind of was able to kind of get this stuff up and running. And now we have the resources and the infrastructure set up so this becomes possible. They said no. They deny his ADA request. They tell him that no, because it's, you know, it's too much of an impact and changes the educational situation too much. So whatever. So finally, so we had him on the show, right? His story has been slowly getting out. There's a great group of students called KU Activists who have been kind of sharing both our show and have been sharing out his story to students at Kutztown and kind of beyond. And now you've got, you know, some attention to this case that's happening because this article that appeared in the Philadelphia Inquirer. And they profile Steve and a kind of series of what's happening at other universities that are going through similar kinds of stuff and how they're handling it. But it's like, you know, phenomenal to see that story is getting some kind of light of the day because it's freaking horrible what they're doing to Steve. So, you know, all I got to say is, you know, stay tuned and kind of keep an eye on what's happening at Kutztown University, because I can promise you that there's more to come. Right. And I know that it says at the end of that article that Steve has filed complaints with, I forget the office that he sends it. So let me just give you that real quick so I get the right information. I'm not going to misspeak. Yeah, he has the accommodation.
Like, can he file like an unfair labor practice too?
I would say so. Like, so this, he's filing a complaint with the EEOC, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. That's going to go forward. And look, frankly, I think there should be, if there's a grievance that has been filed as part of the union, but that sure as hell should be one. In my mind, you know, right now, kind of union leaders should be screaming bloody murder at the top of this. Right. And it was also, you know, you look at what in that article from the Philadelphia Inquirer, right, that was featured in there. And you have one kind of union representative for that does higher ed unionization. And it's not from ABSCUF. It's from the AAUP, right? American Association of University Professionals. And, you know, the president of the AAUP comes on and she says, look, this is wrong. Right. At the very least, that's what we should be seeing both at the local level and at the state level and the pushback against this stuff. But crazy. Crazy. And then you have what's happened at Penn State, right? You know, because, you know, Kutztown University has all these voluntary protocols, right? To say, oh, yeah, you know, if you like, maybe you can tell us if you tested, whatever. And maybe if not, no, you just don't. They're going through all these kind of weird machinations about, you know, percentage of testing. So how do they know, like, the percentage of students who have been vaccinated? Well, they sent out a voluntary survey that if you would like to tell us, tell us. Right. And of the 2,000 people that kind of responded to the survey, 80% are vaccinated. Right. Problem is, of course, Kutztown has about 8,000 students. Right. So you're handing me kind of like fake numbers. Right. We just had a survey that landed in our inboxes as faculty a couple days ago say the union is trying to help out the administration determine how many faculty members are vaccinated. Fill out this voluntary form. Please give us information. Right. I mean, this is not how this should be operating, right?
And who's sending this out?
But the faculty union with the administration trying to help the administration figure out the numbers of faculty that are vaccinated, right? Because they don't know those numbers. They don't sure as hell don't know the student numbers. And you see the difference what happens at Penn State, right? Penn State had it kind of like you get vaccinated and you show us proof of vaccination, or, right, you're going to have to submit to kind of mandatory testing, right, on a periodic basis. And there's a consequence attached to that. Not just like, oh, if you don't, well, you know, you're going to harm the community. It's not a freaking moral appeal. No, those students, you had 117 students this week who missed their required COVID-19 testing thing. And guess what? They got suspended, right? So there's a consequence attached to that. So now those students have a choice to make. Either you, okay, you're not getting your vaccine, go get your freaking test then, right? And if you can't do that, I don't know what to tell you. You broke the rules, just like any other rules, right? So there you go. There's a kind of a study and kind of difference right there. That's a similar process that you get at Westchester University too as well, right? Another state system university, even though Kutztown says, well, our hands are tied, we can't do anything, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. And last but not least, we have the PA Republicans decided to say, you know, get right back. And the first kind of little hissy fit they had, they're coming back full charge, full heads of steam to do the work of the people of the Commonwealth. Want to make sure that they're going to attack, go to war against Governor Wolf's mask mandate to make sure that we kind of roll that back because he's a bad man that he put a mask. He doesn't have the authority to do this. Right. And so they successfully fought this back. Right, Sean? No mask mandate. They're able to go in there and kind of do the business of the people.
No, that's not what happened. So I think what was pretty funny was they held a press conference about this Wednesday or Monday morning at like 11 o'clock outside Lieutenant Governor's office. And they got some stuff from, like, none of them were wearing masks. There were about 12 the leaders and like 10 others without masks. And then like Mark Scalforo goes, like, are you just virtue signaling at this point? Like, aren't you concerned? Like, they're talking about, like, local control. And they said, like, you know, like, if you're talking about local control, then, like, let's look at the numbers. The top 20 counties with transmission in Pennsylvania are all Republican-controlled counties. And Republican counties that voted for Trump, aren't you failing your people, your constituents at this point? And they just went on to blame Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fauci did it. Dr. Fauci did it.
Well, they're like, well, we've heard a lot of mixed messaging starting with Dr. Fauci throughout this whole entire time. Just like,
yeah, so let's get back to the point. People in your district, right, are disproportionately infected with COVID and have low rates of vaccination, right? So
they're really just like, yeah, like.
So you have Dr. Fauci who's giving all this conflicting information. So you as a Republican representing a particular district should have some local control over that so you can decide to protect your constituents, correct? So, Dr. Fauci.
So like they did this and it failed. They did not advance any amendments. They did not have any support for the amendments going after the Secretary of Health or like this mask stuff from their caucus, the votes were going to fail. And the thing is, like, what's happening is this is two-thirds of parents, like 70% of parents support mask mandates in schools.
Totally.
This is a whatchamacallit. Like, this is stuff that like everyone supports. The only ones who are screaming about this is such a like small minority.
Yep.
So
yeah, and look, and there will be consequences for this stuff, because especially now, you know, look, I mean, my kid's school, you know, there's kids out with COVID every day now, right? They're starting to actually report the numbers. The numbers, what's interesting is that if you look at the Penn Ridge School District where I'm at, you look at some of the other school districts in Bucks County, right? All the numbers are reported, and Penn Ridge has only reported one case, right? I know just from my kids, right, that there's like a heck of a lot more cases than that, right? But you know, you've got a school district that's basically saying, you know, don't report the numbers or keep your kid at home, just follow kind of like normal. Like if your kid was sick, you don't have to report if they had COVID or not. They're getting conflicting information about that from the school board. But parents know, right, that there's kids that are sick with COVID that have been in the classroom with their kid. And they also know that those kids don't wear masks, right? And so now you're getting, I mean, seriously, you're getting parents. You know, again, I mean, this is happening, and this is not, and I'm only focusing on Penn Ridge because I know it well, but you hear these stories that are happening now across the state, right? In these Republican districts, right? Fairly conservative districts, right? When you have parents whose kids are now getting sick and now see that their own personal kids are at risk, because really that's what they only care about, right? They only care about themselves. So when they start, the impact is there, and they find out that the school board is putting them at risk, you're getting a huge pushback. And these politicians know this. Right. So they want their cake and to eat it too. They want to be able to scream Dr. Fauci and anti-mask and taking away my freedom. But they sure as hell don't want to be the ones that are going to be responsible for removing the mask mandate and having kids get sick. Right. But they'll never tell you that. Right.
Yeah.
So Anyways, there we have it. Happy Pennsylvania, everybody. Happy Pennsylvania. Anything else going on in the state, Sean?
Yeah, the circus is going to continue next week. Republicans, I would just stay away from the Capitol if you were a normal person. There's going to be a bunch of like pro-life marches and rallies next week in support of the six-week abortion ban. I think they're expecting like 3,000 people.
Wow.
On Tuesday to show up to the Capitol, so literally stay away. This will be a spreader event. Like,
no doubt. So you know, one of those things, yeah, where you got the Venn diagram, right? You know, you've got Circle A is the kind of like the people showing up for an anti-abortion. Circle B, the anti-vaxxers, and it just actually looks like one circle, right?
So yeah. I mean, it is amazing, like seeing these like right-wing events go on. I mean, I will say there's times I don't wear a mask when I'm in the Capitol walking around, but I'm vaccinated with other vaccinated people. Like, but it's, when like you see like these people just cram themselves into a room, like 40 of them, like, and none of them are fucking vaccinated. You know that. It's just like, you people, like there might be like 3 or 4 of you might be dead within a month.
Yep.
Because of this.
Yep.
Like Franklin County, which is like Mastriano's home county, has zero hospital beds open right now.
There you go.
Like there are counties in southern central Pennsylvania, south central Pennsylvania, don't have any hospital beds. And it's starting to hit that point, like up here in Dauphin, like, you know, like the hospitals up here are starting to get filled. I mean, it's not good.
No, it's not. It's not good at all. It is not good at all. But there we have it. That's where we are. And there you have it. So listen, we're going to come back. We'll take a quick break and we're going to come back with this week's last call. We got a little space news and some fun stuff for you. We'll blow through it pretty quickly today. Got to get out there, enjoy this freaking awesome weather. That's for sure. I got a couple hours before my kids get back home, which is good. Although I'm going to be working, but that's okay. You got to do what you got to do. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We will be back right after this quick break with this week's last call. Be back in a minute. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, sitting here once again with Sean Kitchen. And it's this week's last call, where we just talk about kind of like random stuff that's going on. I love to kind of throw in my little space news, of course, and then we just, you know, what's happening. We used to do all the beer news stuff here too as well, but we kind of put a little hiatus on there after all the kind of like Me Too explosion stuff about what was happening in the kind of the beer industry. But so here we are. So got some kind of little space stuff that's happening among the galactic capitalists. SpaceX, of course, launched its 4 non-astronauts into real space for the 3-day tour. Why do I say real space?
I think you can thank me for making sure you remember.
I can, right? I did not have that. Yeah, Sean is actually, Sean's become a bit of a space nut of late. Like the last two shows, I think he fed me space news, which is pretty, pretty remarkable. So I'm glad to have, I have, you know, some influence on the kids. So, but real, and I say it's real space, they go launch in real space because they're actually in orbit for 3 days. Right. So like, you know, like Jeff Bezos's kind of like penis rocket went up and kind of like hug at the edge of space, broke the kind of like what they say is the boundary. Then it kind of came back down.
Just the tip.
Just the tip. Just the tip. And they have their, then of course you had the, what do you call it? Virgin Galactic, basically sending up their little space plane that kind of went into what a lot of people say is actually not actual outer space, but whatever, you know, there's all disagreements over that, but went up and there was some weightlessness and thing that was in there. This was the first time that you had actually, you know, non-astronauts going up and actually spending any kind of extended time in space. And the guy that was, basically funded, the billionaire dude, because that's all, that's the only people who go to these things, right? The billionaire guy was a guy by the name of Jared Isaacman, and he's actually, you know, I believe it's still the case, he has this kind of like online payment service thing that he runs, but out of Allentown, which was kind
ADP
of
or no,
what's that?
It's not ADP, is it?
Oh no, I'm forgetting the name of it.
Not okay.
No,
that's like the payroll processing company that is like really big and based in that area.
No, I don't think it is. Let me tell you who he is right here as I'm talking about it. But he's Jared Isaacman. Basically, he paid the kind of like, you know, the fee to Draken International. Oh, that's actually a private Air Force provider. Shift 4 Payments is the name of it, right? And they do think like business-to-business stuff and things like that. So that's not the point. The point is that so Isaacman paid for on this stuff, and you had some you know, civilians, right? You know, who were on there. They were not kind of astronauts. They went through some training and went up there. This one woman who was up there, she actually was treated at the St. Jude's Medical Center when she was a kid, right? And they raised over $200 million for the St. Jude's Children Research Hospital in Memphis. You know, so it goes up there. And it was Sean and I were talking about this before on the show, and I don't want to get into this long discussion of this for on today's show because it'll just kind of like, whatever. But so let's just bracket one conversation for a second, right? Just kind of say, look, these are freaking billionaires doing whatever the hell they want, right? And kind of like setting and charting out kind of directions here. That's why I call them galactic capitalists. That's why I've talked about galactic capitalism, that we've got to pay attention to this stuff because they're writing rules that are really good. I'm telling you, are going to have a dramatic impact over the next century, right? And they're doing it in a completely deregulated and unregulated environment practically, right? So given that, but if you want to talk about just the kind of like, you know, of the billionaires, like, and how they kind of approach this, like, and how horrible of a human being Jeff Bezos is that the fact that when he did his little Blue Origin thing, the Just a Tip flight, right? When they went up there, it was like with his brother and it was all closed off, right? Nobody was, they weren't really kind of like invited to the launch. They weren't, people weren't invited to take part in it, to see inside during the flight or any of this kind of stuff. It was only afterwards that we got to see some things. Right. Richard Branson, when they did Virgin Galactic, at least, you know, he had the presence of mind to basically go up and have cameras the whole time because, you know, look, he's a freaking attention hound. Right. With Elon Musk, right, you know, and SpaceX, like, you know, they've actually got, you know, a rocket that's actually been in service. That's been in a program that's been kind of gradually kind of developing. And they, you know, has a sense of like part of, if you want to have people on board, you allow people to be part of it. And in our kind of like, you know, celebrity culture, our billionaire culture, the way that this stuff is, the fact that they kind of like invited people in, they had a show that was part of the launch, they had people behind the scenes, they had cameras that were in the capsule, you had updates from people there, and that they raised $200 million for St. Jude's, right? I mean, there's some kind of significant differences. Now, does that mean I'm kind of like, I'm an apologist for Elon Musk? I mean, you might say that if you want, but certainly not. I mean, the guy is like, you know, the guy is, you know, as a megalomaniac as these other folks are, right? But, you know, you just think about even those differences. And, you know, I think about why I got kind of like so invested in kind of like and interested in and thought about the awe of space. And it had to do with that kind of that public participation in something like the Apollo launch and things like this. And, you know, my kids, like, you know, saw like first time, like actual, it was like actual people, even if they're, you know, people that will never be in our circles, actual people kind of going up there and doing that. They were like, you know, full of wonder, right? And, you know, that's always the promise of this kind of space exploration and things like this. If we did it for the people, right? If we were part of a kind of a process, a collective process of kind of doing this stuff, we could do kind of really kind of cool stuff without freaking wrecking everything, right? And that's not what's happening here, obviously. But anyways, it was wild to watch. I think it's important as to mark it as this is a significant moment in, we're going to start to see a shift, because now that you have people up there, we're going to start seeing this on a more regular basis. You watch. And what is that going to mean for what it's going to eventually do to our economy and kind of shift the directions of, scientific inquiry? We shall see. We shall see. Right. So you got that. Meanwhile, kind of Jeff Bezos probably is still kicking and screaming from his, the fact that SpaceX just did that this week with the SpaceX Inspiration. He's still kind of throwing the hissy fit when it comes to the fact that the NASA granted SpaceX the contract for its lunar lander vehicle, right? Well, for the Artemis program, when they start kind of landing on the moon, when that's going to be happening in the next few years. And Bezos is kind of basically saying it was unfair. You know, and the fact that he's throwing a fit and throwing this big lawsuit, right, saying that they were treated unfairly and they weren't given, that now NASA should have two contractors and they should, Blue Origin should be one of them. Let's be clear about this. Blue Origin hasn't done anything other than launch test things and then put Bezos in kind of at the tip of space. Right. SpaceX is actually have a proven vehicle that's been going back and forth and supplying the space station. Right. Has enabled kind of human launches from U.S. soil for the first time since the ending of the space shuttle program. Right. So, I mean, look, say what you want about that stuff. That's actually it's a proven vehicle. And so NASA decides, hey, instead of going at what this Amazon guy says his stuff can do, why don't we just go with the one who's already doing it? Right. And who's actually going to do it for less money. Right. So that's okay. So anyways, they just released a redacted version of the lawsuit today. That's the U.S. Federal Court of Claims, which is really interesting. And maybe I'll talk about that at some point down the future. But so that's ongoing. It's going to be really fascinating to see all that stuff play out and what kind of impact it has on policy. Right. Both kind of like national policy, but also kind of global policy when it comes to space exploration. And if you have not seen the new Space Force uniforms, dude, you got to check them out. If you've watched the remake of Battlestar Galactica, which is, I would recommend it to everybody. It is a absolutely phenomenal series. It's literally, I mean, you remember the Space Force logo, right? Is basically like ripped off from the Starfleet logo from Star Trek, right? It's practically the identical logo, like to the point where you're wondering, like, how come Star Trek didn't sue them, right? Of course, in my mind, I'm like, because Star Trek say this is a freaking win, right? You know, Star Trek is like, this gives us all the free publicity we could possibly want. But so they took their logo from Star Trek, right? And these uniforms like are practically identical to the Battlestar Galactica uniforms. So they're dress uniforms at least. So, you know, instead of it being like the buttons down the center and a lot of gesture, it has the kind of like diagonal buttons going up kind of on it, big silver buttons down there. So you get the kind of like little pirate aspects of it. And, you know, if you're a member of the Space Force, you know, you're not a simple soldier or kind of like airmen, as they would say in the Air Force, but you are a guardian, right? So you got the Guardians of Galaxy thing happening there too as well. Pretty cool. So that was just unveiled this week. So that's a little bit of fun. Other little cool science news is that you had footprints being discovered in the kind of White Sands National Park, which I thought was just a really cool scientific discovery this week. And they found out that means that there are humans that were in North America about 21,000 years ago. And that's basically several thousand years before scientists previously thought about it. And it was, there's a story behind it. It's really cool. If you click on the link in the show notes, you can check it out. But there was this researcher who would go there and noticed that when it rained a lot, right, or there was enough moisture in White Sands, which you don't get very often, right? And it's like kind of like a desert for the most part. But it used to be like, you know, a kind of wetland, basically, you know, back in ancient times, whatever. But he would notice when things got really damp, he would see these ghost footprints, right, kind of at the top of the sand. He was like, couldn't figure out what the heck it was, right? So you kind of dig around, it's not there, and as soon as it dried up, they disappear. Well, it turns out that it was happening like several layers down, right? Kind of in White Sands National Park, where these were kind of like fossilized footprints, and they found like all these like young people, right? So there's lots of kids' footprints and baby footprints in addition to some adults' footprints, but it looks like families were there in this area on hunting expeditions, whatever it might be. And, you know, at the time before the woolly mammoth. So it's just, it's pretty, pretty kind of cool stuff when you kind of think about it. Anyways.
No, that's pretty neat. I'm a big like geek when it comes to like natural history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that and all. I mean, I feel like that's been out there for a bit that there's been talk about humans being here like earlier than previous thought, which is not surprising.
No, and what they said, the only evidence they had, there was a lot of kind of like secondary evidence that they had. So, for example, they were finding things like cooking tools and kind of early weapons and things like this, and they were turning up. But I from what reading in this in some of this new findings, that there was still a lot of skepticism about it because they were saying, well, we don't have any direct evidence, so who knows if this stuff is churned up or whatever it might be. But this, having it at a specific layer and where they could kind of track it in the kind of the time stamp it basically in the layers of the sands, they were able to kind of like pin it down and basically confirm those previous suggestions that there were, you know, there was people here that were before this. That's just fascinating, cool stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, what do you got going on this weekend, Sean?
I'm going to go see Portugal the Man tomorrow.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have some gummies in store for that. So
there you go. Where are they playing?
They're playing on the riverfront in Harrisburg.
Nice.
So,
awesome.
Harrisburg University has been doing a concert series this past summer and then some before COVID. Outdoor concert series. So this is just part of that, continuing that. And it's right between the hospital, the two bridges. They got the park closed off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about like a half mile down from my apartment, so it's actually pretty cool.
Nice.
So I'll be going to that. Looking forward to it. It'll be my first show post-COVID. So
big deal.
And it's like, and it's, this will be like the fourth or fifth time I've seen them.
Yeah.
Since 2008. They won a Grammy a couple years ago for their one song, Feel It Still. You've heard the song, just if you search it, you'll know exactly what it is. It like hit commercial success with like Apple and shit like that. Like Powerade, so they made a ton of money off that song. They're the most humble people to like talk to and like hang out with. So
yeah,
they played at Occupy.
I was just about to say, it brings us full circle to the 10th year anniversary. It's like, yeah, they've done at Occupy Philly.
Yeah, they played at Occupy. Literally like this time. It would be like October 2011. So, yeah, literally like 10 years ago. So,
that's pretty awesome.
These guys, yeah, they are awesome. It's great seeing the success that they've had. They're the most down to earth, humble people. And it's cool seeing like that type of success story.
Cool, man. Well, this weekend, I'm going to be brushing up on doing some more. I feel like I wish I had discovered this a little, not discovered this. I wish I had kind of forced myself to do this a little bit earlier in COVID. But I've started playing D&D again with my kids. Right. And I've never like DM'd, like dungeon mastered a kind of a campaign before. I've always been a little bit intimidated by all the kind of rules and all those kind of stuff that goes into D&D. And I've always, you know, I'm not like a math head. So sometimes like it could feel a little bit overwhelming. So I always love to play, but I never DM'd. So this is my first time doing it. And I started them on this campaign, which is part of the starter set for Dungeons and Dragons. But I've also started kind of designing my own campaign, right, for a little bit later on. And so I've been reading these books, you know, reading the kind of Dungeon Master's Guide, because it's a new edition. Because like when I played, it was like second edition, and now it's in like the fifth edition with all this new stuff. But it's so I've been actually kind of like finding these cool map campaigns or map programs online where you can actually design your own world maps and things like this. I've got all these kind of cool backstories that are going on, and it's like, and I've been watching the show that my brother first told me about, Ryan. It's called The Dungeon Run, And it's basically, you know, I mean, people probably heard of Critical Role if you know anything about, you know, like online gaming stuff. Critical Role got some, a lot of popularity in terms of like, you know, doing kind of tabletop gaming, Dungeons and Dragons, in a kind of a show format. Dungeon Runs is similar to that, but the storytelling is freaking awesome. And the guy, the Jeff Cannata, who's the dungeon master, is just he's just amazing at crafting the story. And everyone else that who's playing is also, you know, kind of geekhead, but also actors, right? So they're role playing out a bunch of stuff. It's really fun. But each show is like 3 hours long, right? You know, it's like this like long campaign. But it's been the kind of thing that's been able to keep me focused on my desk, because I've made no bones about the fact that going back to campus this year was not something that was on my like, you know, top 10 list of things to do. I'm really, really reluctant going back, and there's a lot that's kind of bound up in that. But it was kind of like, okay, I got to get this stuff ready, I got to do the preparation. So I would just kind of start watching these, the dungeon run, and have it kind of on and kind of one screen in the background as I'm kind of working on stuff. So it's kind of playing in the background, because a lot of stuff I'm doing is not, I don't have to have full concentration, right? So I have it going on in the background, be able to follow these things. And it's just been a blast. And my kids are starting to watch it now, which is fun. So we're trying to find a regular gaming night. And I'm really, it's been fun. Even got some little miniatures and things like this. So it's pretty cool. Look what's on my desk. See, I can prove it right here. There's my Dungeons Master Guide right there. So, and look, I can even show you this, right? Even put this up to show folks. I don't know if you're able to see it. Yeah, it's a tavern. Right. So I got a little map there. So it's been a lot of fun. Sean's just shaking his head. Hey, Sean, you ever want in? You know, we make a space for you.
I'll stick to playing Magic.
There you go. Well, cool. So that's been a lot of fun, and it's been, you know, the kind of thing that's there. So, you know, you got any kind of D&D? I was even thinking if I hear from people, you know, who listen to the show and things like this, who there's other kind of D&D gamers out there, we might just kind of throw a D&D channel up on our in our Discord, and you know, who knows? Maybe we have say Raging Chicken Gaming kind of happening down the road. We shall see. Anyways, anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, that is it.
All right, man. Well, hey, I hope you have an awesome weekend. Looks like it's going to be fantastic. I hope the show is like off the hook, and it's got to feel great to be kind of breaking out and getting out into back into the show circuit. Because I know you used to love going to shows, so that's always phenomenal. I'll be mowing my lawn too as well this weekend, but I'm very, very much looking forward.
I'm enjoying the weather. I took my AC unit. Awesome. I took my one AC unit out yesterday,
and now you're freezing.
Amazing how it went. What's that?
And now you're freezing.
Yes. It's amazing how like cool my apartment will stay. Even when it gets up in like the mid-70s or like 80s at this point.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm able to just catch drafts right off the riverfront.
Yeah.
Like running end to end. So
nice.
Like there's always a breeze just going from front to back.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Well, hey, man, have an awesome weekend. And we'll be back again next week. We're still working on what we're going to do for Out to Coop Live on Monday. I've got this has been a weird dynamic where I had a couple shows that were lined up, but some scheduling stuff is kind of running into it. Well, I'm not going to get into it, but I'll let you know, we might have look for a show announcement coming out maybe over the weekend if we get someone scheduled. If not, we'll go ahead with another round of open phones or, you know, maybe a kind of surprise show on Monday. We shall see. All right. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you all for sticking with us. Thank you all for kind of your continued support and, you know, the organizing and the work that you're doing out there. I mean, without the work that everyone's doing out there on the ground, we'd be in big, big trouble. So anyways, this is Kev Mahoney, editor, founder, Raging Chicken. We're out of here for the weekend. See ya!